The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol. Negative Man. Elastigirl. Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Kaldao.
Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, everyone's favoritest Doom Patrol-related podcast.
I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks. And we've got a Waiting for Doom Gmail account, which is waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And we're also on Facebook. And you'll never guess it, but we've got episodes that came before this one. And they're all on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podbean.com. And we're also part of a Inner Circle Comics tribe thing, which is we lived with them for a number of years, and then they inducted us into their tribe.
Yes, there was much hazing. Yes, hi everyone, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at avantgarve. You can also find on Twitter our friend and sentient show Twitter account Wilfred, who is at WFDpod.
Today on the show, we're going to look at a little forgotten gem of a Doom Patrol story that happened between Volume 2 and Volume 3. And yeah, it's got some pretty serious talent involved. So yeah, we'll find out what we think of that soon. But before that, Mike, how was your week in comics?
It was okay. I seemed to get a lot of books, but the quality of some of them was a bit meh. Like, for instance, JLA number 5, it seemed to be more a promotion for the Martian Manhunter book than the continuation of the actual story that's been happening in JLA, which was weird.
This is the first fill-in to keep Brian Hitch delivering.
Yeah. So that was interesting. Batman Robin Eternal number 8, it was okay, but yeah. Black Magic number 2 was really good though. So that was great. As was The Fade Out and Darth Vader number 13, which I'm actually reading now thanks to the Vader Down crossover that's happening with that and the main Star Wars book. And Saga came back last week too, so that was really cool. So it was an okay week, I guess. Nothing really rocked my world that much, but it was okay. Yeah. How about you, Paul? What have you been reading?
Okay. I've done very little reading, but I did read parts 1 and 2 of Vader Down.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, as we discussed last week, it's not his battle with depression. It's actually about him being on a planet. So it's like Black Hawk Down, and he's the Black Hawk as such.
Yes. What are you thinking of
it? No one's rescuing him.
Oh, God. Well, yeah. Someone's trying to help him.
Yeah. A few things going on there I'm not really sure about, like evil droids. Where did they come from? That sort of stuff.
Yeah. Apparently, they've been in the Darth Vader book all along. They were like his sidekicks or something. Yeah.
So. Interesting. Yeah, but nothing else much to speak of. No, haven't even started watching Jessica Jones.
Wow. Yeah,
all very quiet.
I've got half of the final episode to go. So.
Wow.
Guess what I'll be watching.
Here you are talking to me.
I was quite frantically eating dinner and watching as much as I could, and then I was like, "Oh, look, I can't let down the fans, and we've got some Doom, but we've got some newish Doom, but well, new to me, Doom Patrol to talk about because I'd not read this story before." So,
yeah,
it's nice when we can find a little random story that you know. Well, I'm assuming you hadn't read it before either.
No, well, I bought this off the stands when it came out.
Oh. There you go.
Anyway, we can cover this in Doomsplaining. I think I'm hearing some ticking, aren't I?
Yes. Oh, look. Surprise, surprise. It's the Doom Clock. Okay, so we check the face of the Doom Clock. It's still telling us that the last book we had for the Doom Patrol was issue 22 of volume 5. The Giffen Clark run, cover dated July 2011, actually going on sale May 4th of that same year. So it's been 4 years and 30 weeks, 3-0 weeks since the last book. Over 4.5 years. That's I don't know. The last appearance of the team has only been 16 weeks ago in two different comics. We had All-Star Section 8, number 3, had a cameo of the team in a background of all the big Justice League heroes meeting up. And Justice League United, number 12, had a one-panel appearance of the team with Stargirl getting Robot Man to join her on her next mission. But this week in Doom Patrol history, on sale for a mere 12 cents on December 5th, 1963, with a cover date of February 1964, was issue 85 of My Greatest Adventure. Yes.
Wow.
Now, this was actually the last issue of the comic to actually bear the title My Greatest Adventure, because it changed over to its new title of Doom Patrol, starting with issue 86. And this issue featured two stories, one of which was an 8-page backup story by Alex Toth titled The Curse of the Cat's Cradle. And the main story was the Doom Patrol story titled The Furies from 4,000 Miles Below, which was created by the legends Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani. And the team were fighting a pair of radioactive creatures created by underground nuclear tests in that. But for whatever reason, Chief decided to spare Rita from the mission by telling her to go off and return to Hollywood, which is a little bit interesting. But yeah, surprise, surprise, Rita came back just in the nick of time and helped save the day. So we actually discussed that story as well as the beginnings of the patrol in My Greatest Adventure way back in episode 5. Can you believe it, Paul? We're up to episode 42 already.
I know. It's the answer to life, the universe, and everything, isn't it?
I believe the answer to life, the universe, and everything is the Doom Patrol. But yeah, oh, you mean 42. Right. Yes. Anyway, yep. That's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Today on Doom Splanning, we're looking at a anthology comic which has a Doom Patrol story in it. And this anthology comic is called Legends of the DC Universe 80 page giant number one, and it came out in September 1998, which isn't really that long ago, but when you think about it, it's 17 years ago, which is quite a while ago.
Still a bit of a hype. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And the incredibly ridiculously anal Mike's Amazing World of Comics has this on sale date as July 22nd, 1998. Cover price, $4.95. So, yeah, it's a bit pricey.
Yeah.
But it is an 80-page giant. Mm. And it was all put together by Mike Carlin. And guess who's on the cover? It's not the Doom Patrol.
No.
It's Joe Kubert, Hawkman.
Yes.
With a very muscly chest, swinging his mace. And there's featured windows for the Spectre, the Teen Titans, and Adam Strange, which is weird because the Doom Patrol are in this book. Oh, there they go. We've got an also starring Kronos,
the Doom Patrol.
The Doom Patrol, Rip Hunter, and the Linear Men. Why don't they ever call them the Wibbly Wobbly Men instead of the Linear Men? They all line up very nicely.
Well, I think anyway. The whole Wibbly Wobblies came well after this.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. All right. So let's flip through the comic and we look at the title page. It says, oh, there's a Doom Patrol story on page 16. It's called Lights, Camera, and Too Much Action. And you know how I came across this comic, Mike?
No, I do not, Paul. Tell me.
It's written by James Robinson, and in 1998, I was buying anything that was written by James Robinson.
Wow. So what about present-day James Robinson stuff?
I'm slightly less committed.
Right.
Is that tactful?
That's quite tactful, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think... but in 1998, James Robinson was on fire.
Right.
Such. Not literally.
His career was quite hot, shall we say. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is when he was writing Starman?
Yes, it's around that time.
Okay.
And, yeah, and it was sort of after Starman that he sort of, his work sort of lost a lot of its fire, its pizzazz. There was, you know, something less enthusiastic about it for quite a while. Right. I mean, there were some bright spots, like when he came back to do the Shade series as part of the New 52, that was very good. But yeah, nothing really caught my eye. I mean, I love all his early works, like everything he did from the moment he debuted in comics with a story called London's Dark, which was a graphic novel, right up to Starman, everything around them was fantastic. And,
okay.
you know, at the end of Starman, I think he just, yeah, I think he lost a lot of his passion. And I don't know if you've heard about Airboy, but that he really faces this head on that, you know, he's some of the battles he's had.
I've not read Airboy, but boy, have I heard a lot about it.
yeah.
Yeah. Not always for good reasons, but anyway.
yeah, but James Robinson's probably my favourite creator in comics, in all of comics.
Wow.
And when I went to America in 2013, he was kind enough to meet me at Isotope Comics in San Francisco. And so I got to spend, you know, a good half hour with him chatting. And yeah, that was when he had just come off the back of leaving DC. So he was prepping a lot of Marvel stuff at that point.
Okay.
So.
Wow.
Yeah, but he's great to talk to, and he was so kind to come down and meet me and bring his little dog.
cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, but he's certainly a creator who puts a lot of himself into his comics. Yeah, I'm not sure too many others, you know, you hear so much about what's going on with them the way you do with James. Mm. So, anyway, so in this story, I guess this is a tribute to classic Doom Patrol.
That's putting it politely, yes. it's quite the tribute.
anyway, let's look at the story. Enough preamble. It has a Silver Age style intro page which shows action in progress. I won't describe what's there because I think I'd rather talk about how we got there first, mm-hmm. okay?
Fair.
So we see that the Doom Patrol's headquarters in Midway City, and it's awesome because it's got this little house nestled between these skyrise buildings. It's very funny. Now, the artist on this is Dave Gibbons, who made a little bit of a splash with a comic called Watchmen once.
Mm.
And so he's a bit of a hack, not very talented. and the inker is Sal Buscema, which is another no name from nobody, yeah. nowhere.
Never heard of him.
yeah. And we've got letterer Todd Klein, who in the 80s and 90s was doing everything for DC, like mm-hmm. he did all of Sandman and things like that.
Yep.
And the colorist is Glenn Whitmore. So there's some pedigree on this book.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, inside the Doom Patrol headquarters, they're sitting there. The team is sitting there. And Rita's got a letter from Hollywood. and she opens the letter from Hollywood, and a producer-director, Bill Daniels, wants her for his next feature. The rest of the team are encouraging her because she looks normal and saying that she should get back to her Hollywood career. And she said, but my Hollywood starlet days are over, especially considering my last experience there recently. And it's got a little asterisk with a footnote and says, see My Greatest Adventure number 85, which is incredibly coincidental, Mike.
I have to tell the listeners that I was researching the Doom Clock stuff before I read this story. And then I was reading it today, and I was like, I had to message Paul straight away. And Paul replied, OMG Synergy, or something like that. But yes, it was an amazing coincidence. It was so cool.
Yeah. And then the chief appears. He's been scanning the world, and there's no danger. So he says, yeah, why don't we all go to Hollywood? So, yay. And Larry's quite excited. He might see some movie stars. So they jump on the plane, and they get to Hollywood, and there's people with placards, and they're welcoming the Doom Patrol and Rita. So
yeah, that's a change.
Nice. Yeah. And Bill Daniels is there. He's a suave Hollywood type in his white suit. And they get into his limo and off they go, and they arrive on the set and they're making a Western, and Rita's going to be the main female lead. She's not sure. And he says, look, why don't we start shooting the next day and we'll see how we go. And then it's next day, it's lights, camera, action, and Rita's there, and her horse has died, and she's, you know, about to cry on cue when suddenly a giant blue robot attacks. And it's a good thing the Doom Patrol are hanging around because giant robots fighting, that sort of stuff, it's all, you know, bread and butter to them.
Yeah.
So Larry collapses on the ground, take a drink. Negative Man zooms out. Robot Man runs across, and they start punching. Robot Man starts punching this robot. And he's going, it's metal against metal, but I'm made of ceramic metal, so I'm tougher.
Ha-ha.
Larry is short-circuiting by flying through and doing blasts, and Rita is punching it. Mm. And I note that Rita has her Doom Patrol outfit under her actress clothes, so she's in her green outfit, which dates this around the My Greatest Adventure period, doesn't it?
Yes.
Before they got their new red and white clothes. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and and then the robot self-destructs. Yeah, and they're all happy that they taught it such a lesson. And then, Anyway, so the crew breaks for lunch, and then the director is complaining that that robot has set them back. And how did it get there anyway? Chief thinks it could be one of the Doom Patrol enemies, and the director, Bill, says, oh, maybe it's one of mine. There are people in this town who hate me. It could be one of those anything goes in Hollywood things, says Rita. Anyway, so they get back to making the film, and they're filming a tender scene. Rita's playing a lady called Mabel, and she's doing a scene with Billy. And just as the camera starts to roll, then a ghostly octopus attacks. It's a giant octopus.
Not just a giant octopus. It's a ghost giant octopus.
Ghost giant octopus.
If that's not a classic sort of Doom Patrol, you know, monster enemy, I don't know what is.
And Cliff is, you picked the wrong day to attack, you overblown calamari.
Oh, God.
And the whole team are there. But the trouble is, it's an octopus, so it grabs them all, basically. So it's impervious to Larry's blast because it's a ghost.
Yep.
But it's holding on to Rita and Cliff, and they can't do anything. The chief is there in his wheelchair. It's not his action chair this time. But he says, maybe strength isn't the answer. Larry, you should move at the speed of light. So Larry starts zooming around the ghost at the speed of light, and he has to do it within his 60 seconds or Larry dies. Yeah, and it dissipates the ghost. Yeah, the whole team are celebrating their victory when the chief turns to Bill Daniels and says, explain why you made those monsters attack us. And Bill says, me? You must be crazy. I'd never. And then he says, your determined stare is too much for me, Chief. Even though you're in a wheelchair, I'm still only half the man you are. I'll tell you everything.
God. Yeah, it's definitely a tribute back to some of the original 60s style dialogue right there.
Yeah. But Bill explains that he had the special effects inventor Ivor create these threats so you'd fight them. And he said, I've made too many flops and I thought if I could film the whole Doom Patrol in action, the entire story around it, I could make a huge profit at the box office.
Oh, Bill.
And Larry's like, entire story around it? That's crazy. And Bill says, and this little bit of commentary, says, stories are going out of style. Trust me, in a few years, all people are going to want to see is action, action, action. So Rita's horrified because you didn't want Rita Farr actress. You just wanted Elastigirl, freak hero. And he said, he's sorry, but Rita goes, well, I've learned my lesson. It's goodbye forever, Hollywood. And then the chief says, take me to the man who created these monsters. There's something about them that was too perfect, even for Hollywood.
Uh-oh.
So they go see the special effects department, and there's Ivor, who's a middle-aged man. Yeah, Bill introduces the Doom Patrol, and he says, I'll confess too, you would have found out sooner or later. So no one is a match for Doom Patrol. So everyone's confessing before they even have to. And Ivor whips off a mask, and he's a bug-eyed alien, a green alien. And his real name is Ivor, with extra Vs and extra Rs, and he's from a galaxy far, far away. And he was sent to Earth to test it, to see if it could be invaded. But the way the Doom Patrol repelled his creations, he's going to leave Earth forever. So he jumps in his spaceship and flies away. And Rita says, it's a good thing you talked me into coming to Hollywood after all, Chief. We got to stave off an alien invasion. And Chief says, I sense something good would come from it. And then the team are like, well, now what? Should we get back home on the plane? And she said, no, I think we should go to Disneyland. And they all go, hooray. And then Larry says, it's the happiest place on Earth, even for freaks like us. Oh, but then they get barred from Disneyland because it's in co-partnership with Marvel.
Okay, just a note, that last bit didn't actually happen, gang.
And that's the end of the story.
Yeah.
Hit me, Mike. What do you think of it?
I think you're right. It's a tribute back to the original 1960s My Greatest Adventure run. And it's a little bit cheesy, but it's kind of cool at the same time. Some of the dialogue, just you kind of think, oh, God. But then you think, actually, that's kind of what they would say back in the original run. So it's, yeah. I thought it was okay. I thought it was a nice tribute to the team. What did you think of it, Paul?
I'd say it's a pitch-perfect imitation of what the Doom Patrol was like in the Silver Age. Mm. I think it just captures everything that the team had, like the whole team using their powers in different ways, menaces appearing every few pages, lots of, you know, really spectacular things to draw. Yeah, I, It's very enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's, you know, it's obviously, I don't know, it captures the team at that time, I think.
Yeah. Especially with that opening panel of, you know, their old headquarters being wedged right between two gigantic skyscrapers. And it's just like, oh, okay, yeah, that's where they were based. Right. Sure.
Yeah. But I remember my reaction at the time this came out, because this came out on the heels of the Rachel Pollack run ended in 95. This came out in 98, and it wasn't till, I think, 2001 that we got the John Arcudi Doom Patrol. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't my Doom Patrol when I read this. It was like, oh, it's the old Doom Patrol. I'm not used to them. They're weird. You know, I was used to, you know, Crazy Jane and... Danny the Street, and
I find it hilarious. Rebus. You thought the '60s team were the weird ones.
Well, weird as in unfamiliar to me, you know, not outlandish.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I didn't have the affection for the team.
Mm-hmm.
But coming back to this story after doing a Doom Patrol podcast and things like that, and reading all these old Doom Patrols quite regularly now, I think this is great.
Yeah,
like I think it's really well done, and the art's terrific. You know, I don't think Dave Gibbons draws a better Rita than Bruno Premiani. I'll just say that.
Yeah, yeah. I've got to say, unless you knew it was Dave Gibbons writing it and you read the credits, I wouldn't have recognized this as his art. I mean, I know it's been a while since I've read Watchmen, but I mean, the art's not bad. It's good art. I just didn't recognize it as his. I've read Watchmen.
Maybe it's to do with Sal Buscema inking. Maybe that's the difference.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I really enjoy this. I mean, it doesn't add anything, but it doesn't take anything away from the Doom Patrol. And it says, you know, this is what the Doom Patrol was like, and wasn't it great?
Mm.
And I think we can all agree it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do like the fact that they were included in this 80-page giant, you know, because, yeah, it's not often they get much recognition in, I guess, that era. This was a very nice surprise to have read. And you're right, it captures the essence of the 60s really well. So, and it ends on a happy note.
Yeah, and it fits in well with that era of the Doom Patrol. Like you could stick this in the Showcase Presents volumes that we've been reading through, and you wouldn't skip a beat between this and the originals.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Good call, actually. Yeah.
So I think there's a fair bit of craft in that, is imitating the style, and I think there's a few sly winks about, you know, Hollywood liking action and you know script isn't that important, and yeah. Mm,
yeah. It was a good read. Good read. I'm glad we found it and we got to read it and talk about it. Mm.
Cool. Now, the rest of the book, if you are interested in that, it's quite reflective of what was going on in the 90s. It came out in the middle of the Kronos run from the late 90s, which I highly recommend. That's a fantastic run. It's only 10 issues. It got cancelled pretty fast, but it was really well written and beautifully drawn. So.
Okay.
Yeah, and this fits in quite well with that. So I actually have this comic filed with my Kronos comics rather than my Doom Patrol comics.
Okay.
Yeah, and the rest of the stories in it are very good too. Like, who doesn't love seeing Adam Strange?
Yeah, and there's some really big names involved in this book in all the other stories as well. You've got, like, Peter David and Bill Mumy on the Spectre. Yep. And you've got Marv Wolfman and George Perez and Phil Jimenez with Romeo Tangal working on the Teen Titans. That's a pretty cool team right there. So,
yeah. Stephen Grant and Mike Zeck on Adam Strange. Dan Jurgens on Rip Hunter. And on that Spectre story, you've got Steve Ditko and Kevin Nolan on art.
Yeah.
Some big names there.
Yes.
Yeah, so the Kronos series was done by John Francis Moore with Paul Guinan on art and Danny Mickey. And they were the regular team on the comic.
Okay.
Which was... quite quirky. Yeah. So, yeah, I dig it. I dig it. I recommend it. Go and get it. Or not. Do what you want.
Do what you want.
Yeah. Live your own life. You are all individuals.
follow your dreams. Paul and I are living proof.
Question everything. Not this. Don't question this, but question everything else.
Yes. Shall we get to the mailbag then?
Yes, thank you. Because it's episode 42, we're struggling for questions at this point. So I asked last time, what's a poignant, which means sad, but I also had memorable or poetic moment from a comic that stayed with you? So we heard from Susan Canary, Black Canary 02, and she said, this one, for some reason, came into my head first. JLA working, Welcome to the Working Week, page 17. Are you familiar with Welcome to the Working Week, Mike?
I am not.
JLA Welcome to the Working Week was a one-shot that came out in sort of the middle of Grant Morrison's JLA run.
Okay.
And it was written by Patton Oswalt, of all people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And you want to know something?
What's
it's
that?
It's bloody great.
Okay.
It is fantastic. So I actually, when I purged my collection years and years ago, I looked at all these JLA one-shots that came out around the Grant Morrison run, and a lot of them are garbage. This one isn't, so it's really well done. So the page she included was this guy gets sort of beamed up to the he's like a teenage kid, gets beamed onto the JLA satellite and gets lost in the confusion. So he ends up hanging around watching the Justice League, taking notes and things, but he sees the Martian Manhunter. And he's just in awe of the Manhunter. And I think it possibly reflects how Patton Oswalt feels about the Justice League. Mm-hmm. He says, for every time the world's been saved in the sunshine by Superman, it's been saved in the shadows by this guy, which is just a great way to capture what the Martian Manhunter should be about when written well.
Cool. Yeah. We heard from Martin Gray at Mart Gray, and he answered with the miraculous return of Jonathan Kent from Action Comics number 507 to 508, touching work from Kerry Bate and Kurt Swan. And he had the cover artwork there. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing something really bad happened to Jonathan Kent to make it a miraculous return.
I don't know. Yeah, my Superman reading starts at John Byrne, so I never went before that.
Right, same here. Well, not the John Byrne bit. But anyway, who else did we hear from?
We heard from Nathan Waddell, who's at Nathan Waddell 1, and he said, so many, lots of them in Wade's Daredevil run, like Foggy at the kids' hospital, and then Matt's depression after facing the Purple Man.
Oh.
Ooh, I've not read all of Wade's run, but that sounds cool. I'd like to read those. Mm. We're all talking about the Purple Man at the moment.
Yes. Isn't he popular? We heard from Steve T-Shirt Meter at T-Park Met on Twitter, and Steve said, Legion of Superheroes 306. Starboy recounts his origin to Wildfire as the Legion leadership vote is counted. And Steve continues, Tom Kalor just seems so wise, so of course they turned him into a crazy person later on. Right.
They sure did. that was in JSA.
Right.
Hmm. Trickle, the Vane Moore, who's at Ostrakus 1, which is much easier to say, said, the entirety of Brian Talbot's Tale of One Bad Rat. I can't think of a more emotionally engaging comic. Tale of One Bad Rat was sort of like a Beatrix Potter story. It was really beautifully done. Yeah, it's very cool.
Okay. Hmm. We heard from Allison DeGentleNerd at VAGentleNerd on Twitter, and she quoted the line, you got to be one of the good guys, son. There's far too many of the bad, which I'm 99.9% certain comes from Preacher. Where Jesse Custer's dad is talking to Jesse as a young boy and giving him a valuable life lesson there. That was a good pick, yeah.
We heard from Jason Sachs. He's at Jason Sachs, and he said Matt Murdock's mum caring for him after his life is destroyed in Daredevil Born Again, which is a fantastic Miller Mazzucchelli Daredevil story. Okay. So if you've never read that, I recommend it tremendously.
Bit of love for Daredevil tonight.
Nick
in Dallas wrote in, and his most poignant moment was that one time when people voted overwhelmingly for the Joker to kill Robin. that's a good and interesting call. Sure, yeah.
We heard from Moby, who's at Shmoby1, and he said, I can't go past Oh, why should the spirit of mortal be proud verse at the end of Crisis 8 for both poetic and poignant? Sorry to be boring. So that's the death of the Flash in Crisis. Ah. That's not boring, Moby. People come back to that because it's so it's a real cornerstone in comics. Mm. Anyway, cover images that had the poignant effect on me were the New Teen Titans 39, where Wally and Dick are walking away in their civilian clothes saying they quit, and also the Neil Adams Green Arrow, Green Lantern cover, where Green Arrow is holding an overdose victim's body saying, he's gone, we lost, and Hal shouting, like hell. That was such a powerful image to me. And that's from Green Lantern, Green Arrow, number 6.
Mm.
Mm. Mm. I've not read those old wins. I've read the Titans one. And, Dick quits for a couple of issues and comes back as Disco Nightwing. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
We also got an email from everyone's favorite doctor, Dr. Ange. He is a man. And Ange wrote, hey all, I am working, so can't eloquently discuss the most poetic / poignant moment. So I'm going to have to give you my most poetic and poignant moment. So briefly, Swamp Thing number 34 by Alan Moore and John Totleben. This is a consummation issue where Abby and Alec declare their love and she eats a tuba of his, which puts her in touch with nature as he is in touch with it. That whole issue was beautifully written and drawn, totally poetic, perhaps even psychedelic, which makes sense as the tuba had LSD-like compounds. Hmm. It was also poignant as these two were clearly in love for some time, but just never said it to each other before this. As I voted them the best romance in comics, I suppose this is an appropriate response by me. I worry you think all my answers from the 80s and 90s and always Moore or Milligan or Vertigo. And then he signed off. Ange. Thanks, Ange.
I don't think we think that. Mostly they're Supergirl answers.
Or all of the above. Yeah.
We heard from Doug Savisa, and he said, late on this one, but Marvel team-ups number 199 and 124, never get old. And that's Spider-Man and the Gargoyle and Spider-Man and Beast.
Ooh.
And the Beast. Hmm. So I've never read them because they're Marvel and they're old. So, but they look fun.
Wow. Okay, Paul, so what's your answer for this question?
Okay, well, this is, I don't know if this is poignant. It's certainly memorable, but there's a moment in The Demon Run, which was written by Garth Ennis. I think, I can't remember the issue number, but if I had to guess, it's around issue 55, which is almost before the end of the run. Mm-hmm. And in this, basically all the demons have declared war on heaven. So and it's got a little bit of Sandman aftermath, where the leadership of heaven isn't quite what it used to be.
Uh-huh.
So, but there's... scene where there's two angels talking. It's a classic battlefield scene where between battles where, you know, they're just catching up on things. And it's snowing and, you know, there's snow coming down. And then one of them comments is going, isn't it weird that it's snowing? And then they realize it's feathers. And then you see above them the demon is actually ripping angels to bits.
Oh.
And all these feathers are falling down around them.
Wow.
Which is quite a cool moment. But I never forget that.
Wow. Okay.
All right, Mike, what's your answer?
I have to admit, I couldn't think of one other than a really obvious answer, and that's issue 121 of Doom Patrol Volume 1, where the team died, because the team sacrificing themselves for such a small town in the middle of nowhere, and then it becoming, you know, pretty much permanent for quite some time. It was... yeah, the whole issue was kind of sad, and the fact that they kind of resigned themselves to that being their fate, you know, they saw no other way out of it, so they did what they thought was, and what they knew to be the right thing, to sacrifice themselves to save, you know, innocent people. So that was very sad and kind of touching and kind of like, really? We're actually really killing them off? What the hell? So... yeah, I'll say that. Doom Patrol 121 from the 60s. Yeah, there's lots of other moments I'm sure I will remember the minute I stop recording this episode, but I think that's an apt one for now. Yeah.
Fantastic. No, that's a good one. Mm. I approve.
Thank you.
Okay, that's it for the mailbag of Doom. I'll just zip it up. Zip. All right, everybody, thank you for joining us for a bit of Doom Patrol talk. If you want to catch us on Twitter, don't forget we've got Wilfred at WFDpod. Send us an email. You can be like Dr. Ange and send us an email at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. I mean, if you can't give a quick Twitter answer, then an email could be the solution to that. Mm-hmm. We've also got a Waiting for Doom Facebook page, which has a little bit of stuff going on occasionally.
Yeah.
And next week on the show, we're not going to be here. I'm going away for a couple of weeks. So. Unfortunately, that means we'll probably have to have 2 weeks off,
mm-hmm.
which we will be back in. We'll do another show around just before Christmas, I think.
Yeah, we'll do a Christmas episode. That's for sure.
A Christmas ep.
Yes, sort of. Yeah. But shall we let them know what the question is for that Christmas app?
Yeah, if you would like to send us an answer, the question of the week will be your favourite final issue of a comic series.
Oh, I think we've just done that one.
Yeah.
Excellent. Cool. Well, people will have plenty of time to get their answer in for that one. Plenty of time to think about it.
Think, people, think.
Yes, for the love of God, don't. Think.
Or don't. Just don't think.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want.
Off listen the top to of your head.
Us. Or don't. Yeah.
Now, they should listen to us. God. Yeah. Oh, dear. All right. That's it for this week, guys. Thanks for listening. We will catch you again in 3 weeks' time.
3 weeks' time. Yeah. And if you're not sure what to do in the interim, you could leave us a review somewhere or, yeah. you know, tell people about us or listen to all the old eps you haven't heard.
Yeah.
Some of them are really good. There was one that was awesome.
Paul's favourite one is episode 7, which is all about the John Byrne era.
Oh, dear.
Okay. All right. Thanks for listening, guys. We will catch you next time on Waiting for Doom.